humans should not be writing code. I think that humans are not built to write code. The other thing that people, I think, dismiss about AI is like, they think the bar is low, like that it doesn't ship good quality stuff, or it's like for junior engineering type things. It can go spend like the equivalent of me spending an entire week on designing that. And so I think that's sort of like the level of depth and quality of software is going to get quite high. That is basically prompt engineering, is effectively like, I think of it a bit like poetry. Like you're trying to evoke much more, and you're trying to use the right kind of words that are effectively like shorthand for describing like all of the creative constraints to get that output.
Thank you for being here and for taking the time to have a conversation with us. I have been a Gumroad customer for a long time. I'm actually a Gumroad investor through the like crowdfunding that you all did in the past. So have always been a big fan of Gumroad. Thank you for doing all that work to enable the community to create and sell stuff. But it feels like, and I sort of, from your online presence, very much associate you with the Gumroad brand, but like you have a ton of other stuff that's going on in the world. Maybe it'd be useful to actually start with just like the breadth of, I think it's all under the anti-work umbrella of like all these other products and businesses that you built. You want to sort of give us that high level?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I started Gumroad in 2011. So 14 years I've been working on it. And about 2 years ago, so in about 2022, I just felt like the sort of run that Gumroad was on wasn't ending, but it was kind of plateauing. It wasn't necessarily taking like all of my mental time and energy. And I had built a skill set of software development and design that I wanted to kind of like keep working on, keep getting better at. And so we started working on like a bunch of different projects under this umbrella called Anti-Work. And I felt like one skill I had developed over the last like decade was getting really good at automating all of the stuff that wasn't creative. So Gumroad was basically just me. We were doing over $10 million a year in revenue. And I felt like that's mostly just because I'm a software engineer. I knew how to kind of use the tools out there to kind of hook all the inputs and outputs together so that I just didn't need to manage like a big team or didn't really need to do that much stuff myself. And so, yeah, I just kind of was like, okay, well, what are the actual components of that? And can those be turned into sort of SaaS products for other people, such that maybe other founders of companies similar to Gumroad could have a similar life? And it sort of this meta conversation around just generally what happens when your time is freed up due to things like AI, software automation, like how do you want to spend it? And I like building stuff. Like I want to free up my time such that I can spend more of my time building stuff, you know, not like 24/7, but like a good chunk of my time I spend every day coding and designing, and I love doing that. I've been doing it since I was a kid. So anyway, that's kind of Anti-Work, and like the sort of the breadth of what I work on is Gumroad, Flexile, which is HR and payroll and equity, kind of like a Carta-esque product. We have helper.ai, which is like a customer support sort of intercom type product. And we have Iffy, which does content moderation. And we have Shortest, which does QA, natural language QA. I actually have some notes over here, but like trying to figure out how it's going to work in the future. And then I have a bunch of random stuff that I like work on. I prototype, I write some blog posts. I feel like I'm sort of more generative than I've ever been. It's a lot easier to be generative when you have AI, generative AI helping you out. And I think you find out that most of your ideas are not very good. Like over the last, I don't know, 15 years, I've had thousands of bad ideas and like one really good one that's, you know, like that I feel like often it feels like that anyway. But it's nice to like have an idea. And then instead of like just have it sit in your head being like, oh, that's a really good idea, to actually build it, realize it's not that good of an idea, and then like move on with your life. And like, I feel like I sort of find that I'm more sort of like mentally clear because I don't have all of these, I think of it like food poisoning, like all of these things in me that are like hard, like I haven't digested entirely. And it sort of makes it hard to like focus on what I should be really focused on, or recommit to Gumroad, or spend time with my friends and family, or like whatever it may be. If I'm like so aloof, like thinking about this idea of like, oh, I need to like figure out this problem, right? There's this thing that's plaguing you. But with AI, you can figure out the problem much, much, much faster. And then generally you kind of really, that idea I had for a blog post or a book or a product or an app or a service or a tweet, wasn't actually that good, and I can move on with my life. And I feel like just the bar for like what I feel like I want to ship to the world is just like a lot higher than it used to be.
I love that. We should double click on that thread. I think that's a really interesting. That actually seems like a good blog post. I don't know if you've done something already. I would read that blog post. Just on the anti work, is this like, are all of these different products slash companies, is this like all bootstrapped, or is it like you've raised, or like you put in your own money to do this, or like how does that actually end up working with all the different breadth of what you're doing?
And yeah, I mean, it's just the continuity of Gumroad. So I started Gumroad as a C corp, you know, raised early stage, you know, angel seed, and then a Series A from Kleiner in 2015, failed to raise our B, bought back some investors. Excuse me. And then in 2021, we did this crowdfunding round, which you participated in, and also 7,000 other people. And so when I had sort of these ideas or anxieties or whatever I wanted to work on, other stuff outside of that, that wasn't exactly Gumroad, I felt like it all deserved to be under that umbrella. Like the investors effectively get like a buy one, get seven free, you know, kind of like as much as I feel like building software, that will all kind of like be under this umbrella company. So Antiwork, Gumroad, they're all the same, you know, at the end of the day. Like, and I think that also makes my life simple, because I don't have to think about a new cap table, new investors, new team. Like, it's just easy to be like, I just work on stuff. It all kind of goes, you know, I generally don't tend to work on stuff with like a high capitalist mindset where I'm like, oh, how do I generate as much value for the world as possible? I'm trying. I think one of the privileges of running Gumroad is to just be able to spend a little bit more time thinking about like just what's fun and weird, and maybe that will eventually lead to something interesting. But what are some toys that I can build that are just play around with ideas and not so focused on just like, you know, MRR or whatever is on Twitter. It's more about, yeah, just like learning. Actually, I would say it's probably like the framework is like, what can I learn?
Yeah.
What does AI enable me to learn that I wasn't really able to learn before?
And are there like full time, like does each of these different products have like someone who's like a full time employee work, or does it like kind of like ebb and flow between like whether there's stuff to ship or not ship, or how does that actually work?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I've learned a lot through this process. I was more optimistic around this idea of just like floating people who work on stuff kind of like I do. But I find that at the end of the day, it is a battlefield of products trying to acquire customers. So if you are operating like a side project versus a real company, like you're not going to win, right? Like I think these customers deserve more than that. And are rational actors too. They're not like, oh yeah, I just want to use a side project to like run my business, you know? So in the last year or so, as these products have become more fleshed out, it's each one has a lead and it has a core team that works on it, but not that big, I think. Like, I think, honestly, I think three people max per project. Like I think three people is kind of enough to do almost anything. You know, let's say like a front end engineer, a back end engineer, and a PM, or a designer and a back end engineer, or a salesperson and a full stack person, and me. And I, you know, I fill in the gap. Like I sort of work on all the projects all the time. And I kind of just, that's one reason I think I've embraced AI tools so heavily, is that it allows me to sort of outsource a lot of the low level context switching to AI, such that I can operate on this kind of a little bit higher level abstraction of like what is you know, what should we be building. It's not necessarily like every single line of code anymore, right? It's like, what features should we be building, who should we be building for, what does this interaction look like, and then I have a team that can kind of go execute on each of these pillars. And having a lead for each project also helps make sure that it's someone's core focus. Like someone in the company, it's like their goal to think about, how do we get this thing a product market fit? How do we make sure the support inbox is at zero, right? Like someone who's kind of just like on a bottoms up level, constantly trying to think about that. And I think I'm trying to be a little bit more tops down. Like what's the portfolio of products that we can build? How do they relate to each other? What should one do? What should another do that will, like, when sold as like some sort of suite of tools, help someone automate the kind of the business that I run at Gumroad. You know, the processes, the inbound, the outbound, all the automation that exists in the sort of the orchestration of these software projects.
On that same thread, I was looking at your Twitter prior to today's call, and I saw that you mentioned that AI is now one of the most productive engineers at one of your companies. So the question is, what does this look like in practice, and how does your team collaborate with AI differently than traditional dev teams?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's kind of inevitable. I think it's one of those things that is obvious in hindsight. I forget what there's just some term, but it's like surprising yet inevitable, or like something that feels surprising, but then when you look back, you're like, duh, right? And which to me, one of these insights is like humans should not be writing code. I think that humans are not built to write code. They like code is kind of written for humans to write, but it's really written for computers to know what to do. And it basically just doesn't have good ergonomics. Like it's just not meant for humans to really interface with more so than just is necessary. And I think I realized this a long time ago, that I had sort of learned to code in order to build things. I did not like learn to code and then be like, huh, you know, like what should I do with this skill? It's always been a means to an end for me. And so anyway, when AI started getting really good, I think this happened around last year sometime, with like the early Gemini stuff, Claude. And I was like, wait a second, like I'm asking it to do something and it's doing a better job than me, faster than me, cheaper than me, without the like emotional cost. Like I think people underappreciate how much sort of emotional energy goes into making decisions, like figuring out like what every little micro decision that goes into a big decision. When you can just say, hey, like build a form that allows me to collect someone's email and password. Like there's a ton of tiny decisions that go into that. Like what's the placeholder? What's the label input? What happened? Should I autofocus the first field? Like what's the order? What to order the validations? Do I want front end and back end validations? Do I want, like how strong do I want to make the password? Like, you know, do I use the password input? Is there another input? Like do I email? Is that a real one? And so tell, there are all these things that, basically if you ask AI to do it, it'll do a better job at this point. And so anyway, I think, yeah, AI is, Devin shipped more PRs for us so far this year. It shipped about 80 or so PRs. It's the number one engineer in the company by that specific metric. Obviously there's other metrics you can use. I'm actually going to be talking to these guys who have a lab out of Stanford that actually try to better quantify engineering productivity. So soon I will have a better sort of graph than just like PRs merged, which obviously like someone will be like, oh, that's not the right metric. I'm like, yeah, obviously not, but it's a metric and I use it every day. I mean, every single day I have Devin, you know, so I say, hey, Devin, could you update the pricing on the homepage to do this? Hey, Devin, could you add this section to the help docs and also go through all the other help docs and like, if this set of changes is referenced there, like updated in context of those things. I use it for building tons of front end components. It's not that great at like back end stuff. We just added today, we gave it in access to our Vercel account. So we can now like pull in all the env keys and run things locally and test them. I use it for a lot of small bug fixes that come in. Like I use it for prompt editing. So this is quite an interesting thing in my opinion, which is there's more and more code of the percent code of an app is in the prompts within the app, right? So for example, you might have gum.new, this landing page builder we're working on, which is some Chrome. There's some inputs and some, you know, glue code and some JavaScript and TypeScript and whatever else. But if you think about what is the crux of that app, it's actually the prompt that you then send to AI in which you get back a landing page that you then show to the user. And right, you can think about this with the bolt.new or V0 or obviously like if you think about like Gemini or AI Studio, like it's 99% of the code is the AI model that you're talking to, right? Like there's a tiny bit of like sort of Chrome on top of that, right? And so, for example, if someone says, hey, I tried to do this with gum.new and it failed, you know, I this happened instead, or like I wasn't able to figure this thing out. I can basically tell Devin, like, hey, this bug report came in, like go update the prompt such that this bug is fixed. And it doesn't even have to write any language. It just has to basically think, probably send some, you know, some a request to some reasoning model, like, hey, how do I think about fixing this thing? And then it'll update the prompt within the app. And then I will see the, you know, it'll assign me the PR, the GitHub pull request, say, hey, I opened a PR, what do you think? And I just read it through it and I say, oh yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense that like basically you're just adding a line to the prompt that says, you know, in the case that a user does this, make sure you don't do this, whatever. And then you hit merge and basically like 10, 20, 30 times, I think a day, that will be the experience. It'll be some customer saying, hey, I want this, or this is weird, or this isn't working. I say, hey, Devin, like this is the customer need. Go solve this problem. I may suggest how to solve it. But in terms of actually having to think about like where in the code base is it, you know, is it a front end or back end change? Like all I basically need to think about is like, how does the user experience change, right? Like how does the user experience change? The way it changes is some changes to HTML, some changes to CSS, some changes to JavaScript, some changes to TypeScript, some changes to Ruby, some changes to Rails, and then all the specs and everything else that has to kind of like happen as part of that situation. But fundamentally, the change is always like a relatively small change for these kinds of things, right? So I think basically for bugs, for sort of small feature improvements, for front-end stuff, for marketing pages, like no engineer should be doing any of that anymore. Like if you think about it, imagine you hire some amazing software engineer and you say, hey, could you fix these typos on the homepage? Like that's what people do. Like if you work at Google, like some content, no offense, but like at some scale, this is what's going to happen. Maybe it doesn't actually happen there anymore. But at some companies, let's say, I don't know, let's make up an example, like by and large or something, right? Like the CEO of the company, let's say, is like, hey, I think we should like update the footer from this text to this text. Or, like, are they going to go into GitHub and like figure out where that is? No, they're probably just going to like ping the VP of Eng, be like, hey, could you make this change? Or like the marketing person, hey, can you make this change? The marketing person will then have to pick. Like ping the head of engineering, the engineering person then has to go like find the person to like, hey, could you make, like think about how much time and context, which is like wasted, not even wasted, like spent, but will feel like a waste in the future because you'll be like, just ask Devin to do that. Like just go straight to that engineer, you know, effectively that intern and just say, hey, go make that change, right? Like you don't need a PhD level education to like fix a typo on a homepage. You just need to effectively like search the code base and find it. Yeah. And then over time, like as these models get better and better and faster and all these things, like actually not even that fast, to be honest. It's mostly just intelligence and context length, in my opinion, because I can like, I often use it to say, hey, I want, like a lot of people are like, oh, you don't write code anymore. I'm like, I still write code, but like, I can only write code. Like I can only look at one thing at a time. Like I can have Devin do 10 things while I'm working on what I think is the right thing for me to work on. Like I have a team, right? I work on stuff and then I have a team that works on stuff and we delegate and figure out what's the right thing for each of us. And that's kind of how I think about Devin. Like every engineer will still have, let's say Cursor and be shipping some complicated feature that requires like a lot of thought, a lot of architecture, some migration, some backend code, some signing up for some new third-party service. And, you know, adding those keys into the end file, like using the company credit card to like, you know, buy the subscription, like all of that sort of stuff. But then each of those people will also have an army, sort of as many as they need or want to then also do all of the other stuff, right? So like gum.new, like now that I've built the MVP and I built it using Cursor, now any feedback that comes in while I'm working on Flexile or Gumroad or shit posting on Twitter, or like whatever I may be doing, I can just say, hey, could you just like, I used to like go to humans to do this. I'd be like, hey, you know, Connor, could you go fix this? Or like, hey, this support ticket came in. And more of that, you're just going to kind of like feel directly to AI. You're just going to sort of say, hey, AI, could you just like make this change? Right. I think people are mostly sleeping on this stuff, to be honest. Like I think a lot of people are like, I don't believe you. Like, I don't believe you're actually like using like when, you know, Devin, I just communicate via Slack and GitHub, like just the same tools that I have, you know, I communicate with a human through GitHub and Slack. But it's like, yeah, it really is really, really, really good and thoughtful. The other thing that people I think dismiss about AI is like they think the bar is low, like that it doesn't ship good quality stuff, or it's like for junior engineering type things. But I think at the architectural level, maybe, but I think on the sort of like the root sort of atomic level, like I'm lazy. Like I will not spend as much time and effort as I should, like doing the best possible job on every little single thing, because I'm going to run out of energy at the end of the day, right? Like for example, let's say I'm building a first person shooter, and like I might just like have like the gun be a box, right? And like shoot little like spheres out. But if I say, hey Devin, like go design like a really good gun and put the model here, it can go spend like the equivalent of me spending an entire week on designing that. And so I think that's sort of like the level of depth and quality of software is going to get quite high. Like I think someone could ship like an Assassin's Creed level game like by themselves. Whereas a year, two, three, 4 years ago, like you could get one crazy guy could do Stardew Valley, right? Like that was kind of like the sort of the ceiling of what's possible. Like it's hard 3D and like there's a limit to what you can do. Quests, like there's just constraints to like human labor. But I think, the next 2, 3 years, like some person will just release like Call of Duty, or Cyberpunk or The Witcher 3 or like, some of the, and then what do the team, I think the interesting thing question really becomes like, what do those teams of hundreds of developers do? Like in theory, they could do some crazy stuff, but like, is that even possible? Like, are there like other bottlenecks will show up and like, you just can't organize like a game that with that level of depth, like that's not the bottleneck anymore. And maybe it wasn't a while back, but like we thought it was or whatever. Or movies, right? Or like other things like that. So I don't know. It's exciting. That was kind of a long thing, but that's
No,
how I use it, and it's totally worth what it's worth, $500 a month or something.
I love the enthusiasm. I love the very practical examples. Just one quick comment, and then I have a follow-up question, which is I ship the typo fixes for AI Studio ourselves. So I can't speak for all the other Google products, but
Great,
I'm not
awesome.
an engineer. We make the CLs myself, fix the typos, save our engineering time. Like in this Devin example where you're getting Devin to actually like go and do a bunch of stuff for you every day, like what's the limitation to scale this up? Like is it really just like you are sort of having to manually dispatch Devin for every problem? So it's like how much time are you willing to spend telling Devin things to do? Or like really if you could even automate that, like here's a problem to go solve, like there you could get, you said there's like 70 PRs or something like that as the top contributor, like could it be hundreds a day? Is that like, would it actually like today work to that level for you all?
I mean, to be honest, I think I really believe for the stuff that we're currently building, we will just run out of things to ask it to do. Like, there's just not enough product work in like I that's the bot that's in my like if you said, hey, like you like the entire like Gumroad roadmap is done. Like, it's only let's say like 4 or 5 months of work to do. And let's say in theory that's possible to do in on a weekly basis, like three a quarter in a month, or sorry, a quarter in a week, which is totally reasonable. I think that's definitely then the bottleneck basically just becomes what do we build? And like what does it look like? Like effectively just like deciding. And I do think that like we will have like more product designers and like more kind of user experience product people that are having to think more and more about like what do we actually build. That will be the bottleneck. The bottleneck won't be like typically it's like you have one designer and then you have like 30 engineers or 10 engineers or something, because you just that was the ratio of like it took that long for like engineers to do stuff relative to design. So like why have like four designers who'd sit there and just wait? But all of a sudden it'll be like all the four designers are the bottleneck. Like we actually need six designers or eight designers or 12, like. And then the bottle, and eventually AI will do that kind of stuff too, I think. And then the question becomes like strategic. It's like, well, what should we do? Like what? And I think of it almost like real estate development. Like the bottlenecks of real estate development is not necessarily like building the buildings or designing the buildings. It's like buying the land in order to and doing all the permitting and zoning, like, and these real estate development companies may have like hundreds of millions of assets and be like one or two or three people in the partnership, right? And they just sort of outsource all the sort of like rote labor, but they get to like do all the creative strategizing. And I kind of think of a software a bit like that, where you might have like these partnerships of people who are like able to run these like mega hundreds of millions of dollars a year in revenue businesses. And then the question just becomes like, what should we build? Like, what should we buy? You know, what should we, how should we, but even then I just think it's so different than how things are done today that it's hard to know. Like, for example, like why would I employ anyone? If the bottleneck is lifted, then like, in theory, I can do all of it myself. Like what I used to do with Gumroad, you know? So like, I think there's like potentially this like reckoning, and just like, you basically in software, like, have to start a business. I would say it's like music. Like in music, no one thinks, oh, I'm going to get a job as a musician, right? Like I have to basically like ship my own stuff to the world and build an audience and like monetize that. And I think there's going to be like, obviously the head of the curve, the Googles, the Fangs, like the like large companies, I think you're going to have like an insane amount of like people building and shipping software, video games, art, apps, products. But I do worry a little bit about this like middle, where like, what's like, basically, I think it'll almost be like an aesthetic choice. Like, I enjoy working with people. I enjoy hanging out. Right. And so that will effectively become the reason for it. It's like, I prefer to, you know, versus like, it's the right sort of rational business motivation. And effectively, I will run my business like inefficiently on purpose, because it's like, the goal of life is not to just be insanely efficient about everything. It's to like have a cool vibe, right? And like, not every coffee shop is just like a box with like a robot barista, and nor will it ever look like that, right? But yeah, I think that like, it's really hard to like, I think using the technology I'm using and seeing the trajectory, it is hard for me to be like, why? Like, basically what I've started to tell people is like, the bar to get a job working with me is just so high now, because effectively, one, I you're pulling me away from like just doing a lot of this stuff myself, which is a lot funner than it used to be when I could just like command AI to do a lot of the hard stuff. But basically, you have to be better than me in something, that like, you have to bring something to the table that is not just like, oh, I can write code, and like, you can't type, like, you know, you only have two hands. So like, I'm you're hiring me so I can type like twice as fast as you, and you, and like, all of a sudden we can like ship twice as much, right? Like, that's not the bottleneck. So like, basically it's like, you have to bring something to the table that is just like, not like a, just like a different thing. It's like someone who's traveling with us messaged me on Twitter. He's like just working on the open source stuff, and he's like, how am I doing? And I'm like, you're doing fine, but I just don't know what you're adding, like what you would add to the like, what unique X factor are you bringing that you have, basically have to bring some, like an N of one sort of ability or skill. And then AI can like scale that N of one to like N of like to 100X. But if anyone in the company can take their skill and 100X it, like an additional 1X is like 1% gain. Like it doesn't add a lot, right? Like it doesn't make like a junior engineer, a senior engineer effectively will never need a junior engineer, because you're sort of able to use AI at like to scale yourself infinitely. So like infinite plus one, like it doesn't make any sense. Like why would that be the case? So I don't know exactly. Like it's not like I can. And the other thing people say is like, well, why would those people work for you if they can just do their own? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I don't know. Like this is a thing that I think about, you know, like it's gonna be strange, you know. But it, you know, it's like there are certain things that just don't exist as businesses anymore, like libraries. You don't run like a for-profit library, it just doesn't work. At, you know, like things changed economically to like make it such that those things didn't work, and you know, that's just what happens. Like certain businesses become real and other businesses no longer are businesses. They're still valuable to society, so we do them like for fun, or we get the government to subsidize it, or we have a spouse who makes a lot more money than we do, and then we do it for fun or whatever, right? Or a different group of people do it because their motivations are different. I think that's just like the nature of of sort of capitalism. And also all these things are kind of moot anyway, because in 10 years, like the world will be even more different in all these ways that like, it's not just going to be our industry that has to like go through these things. That's honestly what I love about it, to end my rants. Like what I love about being in where I am is I do feel like the canary in the coal mine. That, and that's what I tell my team. It's like, look, at the end of the day, like, I don't know what's going to happen, but like, we are going to be hit by the tsunami first. And so we get to, we will know, we will be the first iPhone users. We will be the first internet users. Like we will have a good sense of what the world is about to feel before the world feels it. And hopefully that allows us to do something that makes it profitable, makes us good investors, make, you know, gives us some arbitrage in life in some capacity. But I won't lie and say like, you know, like the world is going to look quite different. Like your jobs at this company will look different. You may still have a job, but I won't be able to pay you as much. Like, I don't know exactly, but like, I'd much rather be open that these things are likely coming than like, just keep them in my own head. And like, that's always been something about me, is I'm pretty frank with my team, like what I'm thinking about, what's going on. I actually call it tweet driven development. I do want to write a blog post about this, which is basically I want to tweet something and then I will not. And that will be a signal to me of like, I should run the business differently. Like there's some, I'm not willing to, like, there's something preventing me from being honest. Like, oh, if I tweeted this, then this person who I'm hiring would be like, why the, what do you, you know, and then I would have to. So I use it as kind of a heuristic of like, oh shit, I can't actually say this yet. Even like, I remember when I tweeted like Cursor and Claude 3.5 Sonnet, this is about a year ago, makes it 10 times more fun to be a CEO who codes. I purposefully said like more fun. I didn't say like more productive or anything. I just wanted to like put, I was like, this is crazy. This is some crazy stuff. No one at that point, Karpathy hadn't tweeted about it. Like most people weren't really, Levels.io hadn't used it yet. And, but I was like, I want to put like a lot, I want to like say that like, this is going to be a thing. And so I said more, you know, 10 times more fun if you are a CEO who codes. And now I feel like I try to be a little bit more direct, but that has required me being like, hey, by the way, team, these things are going to happen. Okay. Now that I've told you, now I can go tweet these things, you know? So yeah.
With AI automating and basically being better than humans at coding, I guess my question off of that too, and I think that you've talked about this in some of your tweets as well, as far as like folks now need to focus on learning prompt engineering. So like, how big of a factor do you think prompt engineering is in, you know, for individuals to be successful? Because again, I think at the end of the day, us three could all have the same idea. We all go into the same large language model. If we prompt it differently, we're all going to get different outputs. So how important is that skill, and how do people grow that skill, you know, basically right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think of it like, well, one, it's really important. It's like learning how to Google. Like everyone Googles, and there was like a, there was a period of time where you learned that skill, right? Like you learn how to, like what terms to Google for to get the right answer. And I think of it like that, like you basically still need to know, one, that you want an answer and like the shape of that answer. And prompt engineering is effectively just like the skill of like, the way I think about it is just like sort of pointing, you know, point, like giving AI instructions to go, like go through the latent space and like get, grab that answer for you and then bring it back. So you still need to know what answer do you want, right? Like you don't go to AI and say, hey, I want a video game. Like what? Okay. Like that's going to give you a million different results every, you know, it's like an infinite canvas. But if you say, hey, I want a game that I want to like be able to like have a slingshot, and I want to like basically drag and release a satellite, and I want a planet, and I want the thing to see if I can like get it to rotate around the planet. And that's like how you win the game, is like you have to like get it into the right orbit, like with the right kind of like an old school flash game or something like that. That is basically prompt engineering, is effectively like, I think of it a bit like poetry. Like you're trying to evoke much more, and you're trying to use the right kind of words that are effectively like shorthand for describing like all of the creative constraints to get that output. I took a writing class with this author, Brandon Sanderson, and he said, he calls it the pyramid of abstraction, where if you just say like, there's a dog, like every reader will like come up with a different dog in their head. But if you say that's like a, really a baby German Shepherd or something. Like everyone will have a baby German Shepherd in their mind. Or you basically need to like a mental model of like what's in the audience's head, and there's like a different kinds of audience members, and then you need to decide like what level of specificity do you want, right? Like there's no right or wrong answer, but if you want, like if you're, you know, it's like being a good PM. Like if you want the engineer to do something, make sure you tell them what to do, right? Like if you care, like what do you care about? Right. You may not care about like the color of the button, but you may care about the fact that the button is full width. Right. Like what do you actually care about in terms of the user experience, in terms of the novel that you're writing? And like, for example, like write a sci-fi novel and it must end with this sentence. Right. And that's kind of what prompt engineering is effectively like you're just sort of anything you don't really care about, you just get rid of, and then you just provide enough of the constraints of what you want such that this very, very smart thing will honor you what you want in the best way possible. And this is often the conversation I have with like engineers and other people who are like, well, how do you get AI to like write you a book? And it's like, well, what kind of book? Like, it's like, basically you have a conversation until you've helped them narrow down exactly what they want. And then you say, hey, AI, did you hear that? Just like go make that thing that they said they wanted with all the constraints that they said they wanted and all the things they didn't care. Like do whatever you want on those things. If they didn't mention the length, then whatever. If, you know, like if they really wanted it to be a certain genre, then like they'll say it. And that I think is the skill. How do you get better at it? I think you just make a lot of stuff. Like I think you just prompt a lot. I don't know. I think you just make a lot of stuff. I only have my experience making apps without a lot of AI back in the day, which was just you just like how taste is acquired or anything else. Like you just make a bunch of stuff. You see what sticks. You see what resonates with the audience, and then you think a lot about like why that is and like how you could have done a better job knowing what you know now. And then that kind of like retunes your priors and your weights and biases or whatever, where you're like, oh, I should have, I thought that the, you know, like I wanted the ideas in this novel spread out throughout the entire book, but it turns out you have to basically put all of your good ideas in the beginning, because if they're not impressed by the beginning, they won't even make it to the end. And so there are all these like lessons that you learn. And I think you basically just have to like internalize those lessons such that when you then prompt an AI, you're basically all those lessons are showing up as you're typing your prompt, right? Like all, you know, when you say, like, it's like when you watch someone speed paint on YouTube, like you'd watch these crazy people paint and you're like, when did their painting go from shit to amazing? Like it just happened in front of me. And it's like, well, and how? And like, it basically, there's just all this stuff in their brain in which they've painted a lot of stuff. And they just have really good intuition from doing that a lot of like, oh, this would look good this way. This would good look here. This balances out this thing over here. Like this part is like a focal area. So I'm just going to like point all these other lines in that direction. And oh, it looks like a mountain range. And that's kind of evoking this thing to me. And, you know, and then you just kind of keep doing it. And that's, yeah, that's kind of like what I think prompt engineering is. I think I'm interested in like people who learn purely with AI. Like, I don't know if that's enough. Like, I think, like I can have AI write 100 books, but unless you really like sit, like read the entire book that the AI wrote and then like somehow get audience feedback of that work and be like, oh, that's what makes it good. That's what makes it bad. That's what people resonated with. It's really hard to like basically discriminate the output and know what parts of the output are good, what parts of the output are bad, right? And I think like when someone shows me a design for Gumroad and I say, oh, to change this to, like it happens in a split second. But if they ask me like, well, why do you think this? I can explain myself, but it takes me like time to be like, oh, well, you know, in like 2016, we launched this feature and we did it like this. And then creators hated it because it was confusing. So that's why I think we should do it like this. Like I generally can point back to some level of like where this insider learning came from. And AI doesn't have any of those things, right? And so I think that's why I think there's still quite a lot of durability in like the product and management and strategy level, is that there's just a lot of the stuff that's not really written down. It's not in like training data sets. Code is, design is, buttons is, right? But just overall business. Like, for example, I live in Dumbo, and if I started a coffee shop in Dumbo, one, why would I start a coffee shop? There's like all this analysis that I've run in my head that makes that the right business to start. But two, like, what would you call the coffee shop? And I've decided if I started a coffee shop in Dumbo, where I live, I would call it Dumbo Coffee. And it basically requires like an ego death to not be like, oh, I don't, like, not name it what I want to name, but basically name it something that is like really Googleable, really SEOable. Everyone in the neighborhood will personally identify with Dumbo Coffee. People will, like, immediately it becomes a brand that people care about. And I only had this idea because someone else was telling me something, and he was like, I want to start this restaurant called Dumbo Diner. And I was like, that's a great name. But then I had to think about, why is it a great name? Oh, it's because it evoked these things in me. Oh, that makes sense. Oh, this is similar to this other thing that I had done. That and then that gave me the insight that, like, yeah, of course there's like, of course that would be the right name for a coffee shop, And then, like, implementing the coffee shop is like prompt, it's like asking AI to do it, right? Like, it's gonna, you can kind of imagine in your head like what it's gonna look like. You go to Midjourney and type in like Dumbo Coffee Shop, boom, you're gonna have like 50 of them. It's not that, you have some coffee bags, you have like a roaster that nobody uses, like all that kind of stuff. It's not that. The hard part is actually in like the early strategy, the higher level, the branding, the name, the sales, the marketing. Like, I think that stuff will remain quite important. A good filter actually is to basically, I think about like what has an objective truth to it. And if there's like an objective way of like the best possible sign up form, probably there is like a relatively, like, based on some set of constraints, like username should probably be ahead of password and there should be a button after that, right? Probably not the other way around. But for something like, what is your favorite fruit? Or, like, there's an infinite variety of answers and there's no right answer to that. I think all of that second category, humans will still do. Like, humans will still open coffee shops because coffee shops are not about the best coffee shop. It's about like the one in your neighborhood, the one that matches your vibes, the one that's next to your office or home. There's a gazillion gyms, there's a gazillion, all these things, there's a gazillion of, there will continue to be even more gazillions. But if there's only one of N, then, there's this power law distribution because there is kind of like a right answer to something, like the right signing company, e-signing company, or the right cap table management software, whatever. Then, like, generally AI will do all of those things because you've already said that there's like kind of an objective answer to like what's the right answer. And then, of course, the cheapest solution provider for that will basically just be a bunch of robots. Like, no human will be able to provide that service for cheaper.
How do you think about this goes back to that example you made of the like it factor for the person who's trialing on your team, which if we have time, we should talk about the sort of way in which Gumroad has done like hiring over the last years and how the y'all had the like 20-hour a week thing at one point, which we should talk about. But just one quick follow-up before that, which is like, is another way to put the like X factor comment, like something that I've been thinking about recently is like someone's ability to like deploy energy and like that, like and be especially in a world where like the tools are able to do so much, like your ability to deploy energy is actually like similar to compute and other things, like is the limiter of this, like maybe. And I'm thinking about like a college student coming into the workforce today who like doesn't actually have any differentiated skills. Like they're just like a boilerplate, but like they do have energy. And like for that person, do you think that like mapping makes sense? Like if they have enough to deploy?
Yeah, I think it can. I think that experience becomes way more important in this world. I think I will sort of lean more towards hiring people who just have like a lot more experience than used to matter, because actually it was true that like the young people were bringing in all the energy, and so if you were able to pair the energy with the experience, you could just do a lot of really cool stuff. The concern I have about young people with a lot of energy is that like AI kind of like gives you energy in a way. Like, you still need a base level of energy, but like I can like code from my bed. Like, I can just like wake up and be like, hey Devin, like go build this feature that I got a few emails about. This is how I think you should do it. These are the files that you should probably check, And by the time I get to the office, like 2,000 lines of code have been written. I just check out the branch and I feel like, oh yeah, tweak some stuff here and there, open a PR, assign it to a senior engineer and say, hey, could you look at this? And it's live in 2 hours instead of like 2 weeks, you know, if I had a designer and PM and like all these different steps. I think that the energy is going to be good, and it will certainly be basically required for anyone who's young, because that is going to be like the singular thing you will, because you won't have a lot of experience and you won't have like the intelligence yet required of that AI can give you, can give some senior person or some exec or whatever. But I think I think that has to be very practically used. Like, I think that that energy should be used in a way like that, that person will quickly have the, some sort of X factor. Like, there should be, they're using it to acquire knowledge, acquire experience, acquire a skill set that will, you know, if they're spending all of their free time like at art museums and drawing and painting and like looking at a lot of art books with that energy, then yes, I think they have a role and I would hire them. But if they're just like really high energy, but they're just not, they're like, they're not really doing anything interesting or novel with their free time, or, you know, I think that's like, they're good. They come in the office and they ship a lot, but they still have to be told what to do and they're not really presenting any interesting ideas. Then I think that they're in for a world of hurt. And I just worry that generally college, like, that's what it teaches you. It teaches you how to be like kind of a really good middle of the road sort of executor. And I think that AI will kind of defeat you at that. I actually think things like going to art school will be like liberal arts school, like will be even more important than like going to computer science in the next 5 to 10 years, ironically or not. Because those schools will push you to think, will push you to be more critical. I also think that people will, like, I want to hire people who are like outside of my domain. Like, if I can, if they're just commanding AI to do all the design and ends, like, maybe I don't even need to hire like traditional PMs or traditional designers. Like, why can't I go hire like a visual artist to be our brand designer? Cause like, they're just commanding Cursor to like type a bunch of Tailwind classes. Like, why, like before I'd have to hire a product designer because I needed someone who could not only design, but also do HTML and CSS, right? But now I can just go hire like some amazing brand designer, identity person, and teach them these other things. So I think energy matters, but it needs to be something outside of like what I'm already good at. Like, what, and your goals in life, like your, I want you to basically treat my company like a slingshot. Like, you want something else beyond, and you're using us to like get there. Like, and that way we can like sort of steal some of your energy and wisdom for like a year or 2, 3, 4 years before you're like ready to like blossom and do your own thing or whatever. But you still need like, basically you need interpersonal experience. You need to know how like a startup kind of works on a functional, practical basis. You want to like spend some time around people. You want to build your network. So you want to steal some of us to like go work for you in the future. And so we'll trade that for like someone who generally wouldn't want to work, you know, would be too good, you know, to work for us. But I still, even with all these things in mind, I think it's still like, I think that honestly, the biggest skill is being likable. I really think that that will just be so critical. Like, the number one reason I'm going to want to work with you is because I like being around you. All these other things are also important. But I think someone who's those things and then is able to say, hey, I'm just like funny. And I have like I'm a jovial character and I'm excited to be here. And I have like, I write a book and I want to tell you about what I did and I'm inviting you to my, you know, like that scene, I think will become like almost the entire reason to hire a human being. Like, it'll be just because of their character that they're bringing in, and that will manifest in the product and in the copy and in all the other things. But basically, like, the functional skill will be so easily readable, cheap. Like, that won't be the thing that is like you, honestly, it sucks running a business because you basically can only hire smart people. Like, I have lots of friends who are just my friends, you know, my, like, there are all these people, you have to say no to everyone you know, basically, because you have to go find these random people out of the middle of nowhere, give them visas, who are smart, who have a functional skill, because if you don't, then your business is screwed, right? But what if you literally could basically hire anyone and it didn't matter? And like, all they're doing is telling AI and you're just kind of like hanging out and like, I don't know, like that sounds cool to me, maybe, you know? Of course, there'll still always be, I don't know, things, maybe not, but I do think that there will still be things that look like startups, but they'll be much like, they won't be in software. They'll be in like biotech or like space tourism or like things that are really at the frontier. And I just think like the sort of frontier of science and research has just like intersected with software, and that intersection is ending, right? Like we were the sort of the frontier of human ingenuity, and we've kind of like COVID was like the end. Like we did that, you know? And AI is like the last sort of like thing that is yet to be completely done. And I feel like the science and research part is quickly finishing, and we're kind of like culminating in a bunch of engineering and scale and compute, and like then it's going to be like applying this to like a whole new set of things, which is going to be like biology, chemistry. You know, there's a tons of stuff that is not yet done, but it's not really in the domain of like software, quote unquote, right? It's like, I want to eat a steak that doesn't require me to kill a cow. That's a multi-trillion-dollar industry right there. No one has really figured that out. You know, maybe those are the things that we will get to. And that will still, that like, in that world, do you think any humans are going to be doing the science and research? No, but they will be starting the company, doing the brand, raising the money. There's still going to be a lot of humans involved, but like humans can't wrap their head around a single freaking like protein molecule, right? Like humans will are just not able to solve those problems. Otherwise, we'd have solved them already. Like the value there is immense. It just we like literally all humans can do is like a little bit of math and physics, and like only with a ton of pen and paper, and a lot of computers. That's it. And physics compared to like biology and chemistry are like. Like 1 + 1 = 2, right? Like those things are just insane. I mean, just like I can't even really comprehend how complicated those systems are.
I want to be cautious of our time, but I want to ask one question before we get to our last two questions we like to ask our guests. And, you know, I think Gumroad is obviously a platform that enables creators, but as AI generated content, such as writing, music, and design, kind of becomes more mainstream, how do you see AI shaping the creator economy?
Honestly, I think we may just completely collide with AI in the worst possible way, which is that, and maybe this is one reason that I'm so excited about AI is I need to change my business fundamentally in order to like still have one in 5 years. But two, maybe I just get a sense of it happening to us, which is basically that there. The whole purpose of sort of the quote unquote creator economy was that you wanted to connect with, you needed information, like basically. Like there was this like gestalt of vibes, but it wasn't really like getting coffee from somebody. It was like, I need to learn this skill. I want to learn to code or design or do painting or art or fitness or ultimate frisbee or yoga or meditation or spirituality or feng shui or whatever, a gazillion different categories. And like all of these tools. Like Gumroad provided ways to do that. But soon, like, and it's already happening, depending on what you're trying to learn, like, just go to AI and say, hey, I want to learn this thing or I need this thing. Like, teach me, you know? And I think Gumroad will morph. Like, the nice thing about this situation we're in is we have agency. So we're not just going to, like, just be like, oh, whatever, you know? But I do think that like the sort of the things that creators have to bring to their audiences are going to be quite different. Similarly, it'll be vibes, it'll be likability, it'll be character. It won't be like, oh, you're functionally the best person at this skill. You know, it's like, no, you just have a similar upbringing to me, and we get along, and we like these things in common. And I'm like the coder who also has these things with in common with you. And if you're like Canadian, maybe you want to follow that guy or whatever, you know. And like I think there's basically creators will have to sort of just like musicians, celebrities, I think a lot of these people have probably figured out a long time ago, like there's just like a more personal connection that you're going to want with your audience. I think people in the sort of Twitter community and like a lot of these people, I think they're so driven by the functional sort of, I'm going to teach you how to do this specific skill. I think that will sort of not be as useful. However, I think even when I say that, it does seem like there's a lot of stability. There's just, I mean, I wake up and I'm like, I can't believe people still use Gumroad. You know, like I thought it was like a fad a long time ago. And people still do all sorts of things that don't really make a lot of sense to me. You know, like people do a lot of sports betting, or people do all sorts of interesting things on the internet that like don't really aren't functional already, right? So like it's hard to know. It's hard to know like what will happen. But I think just being out there and like building an audience and like being vulnerable and like having a story and suffering in public to a degree, I think those are all like really important in order to have an audience. If you're just like providing a pure functional skill or craft or whatever, then I think that's already gone to zero. Like there's already a gazillion YouTube videos and Wikipedia pages and ChatGPT responses or whatever that I don't think that that is where the alpha is. Yeah. So I don't know. I also think I would like to believe that like it makes it much harder to actually compete with things like Gumroad, because there's nothing like the thing Gumroad can offer is that brand, is that thing. Like the problem is now there's like five gazillion competitors for every single little thing. And I think it's never been easier to build any of this software, but it's also like, how do you acquire customer? How do you get to scale when you just like, there's like an infinite amount of competition, and also these people can just build the software themselves too. So I think I would say like Gumroad's existential threat is like our creators get so leveraged that they're like, why would I give you any money? Right. Like what if every Airbnb host could just do it themselves? Right. And there's, again, we have agencies, so we're going to like have things like insurance and like all the, you know, marketplace discovery, like things that will kind of be there. But I think we were honestly getting by kind of luckily. We basically were the coders. So like effectively we were like outsourced software engineers. Like you deal with setting up the website and the payments and Stripe for us, and then we'll just go make the stuff and sell the stuff and tweet about it. And all of a sudden, like at least that specific piece of leverage that we used to have on them is gone. And that's good because it'll just make the products better. We'll have to be more honest about, you know, we'll have to get good at certain things that they can't get good at them on their own. It's also why I built Gum.new. It's like, oh shoot, like I gotta give these tools to creators. Otherwise, like they're gonna stop. You know, they can just spit up their own super customized website. Like, okay, well then we should help them do it. They should use our tool to do that. You know, and so it's definitely a learning process, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. The final question, that was a great response. The final two questions we like to ask folks: one, what does your personal tech stack look like today? And then secondly, what's something that you hope happens in the AI ecosystem in 2025, and what's something you hope doesn't happen actually?
Yeah, my personal tech stack, I have a MacBook Pro on which I have Cursor and Safari and Apple Notes, and I deploy stuff to Vercel, and then that's kind of all my personal stuff. And then anytime that sort of we need a team, you know, Slack and Devin kind of come in to the picture. So yeah, that's kind of like my personal tech stack. I use a ton of V0 as well. Like almost every idea I have, like website, anything, I'm just like it's honestly like heaven to just like be like, hey, I have an idea. And instead of just like preaching to you in English, like I can actually send you a V0 of like what I mean. And you could like click buttons and check boxes and it's like Shatsian's amazing, Tailwind's amazing. It's just been awesome relative to like how long it would have taken. Like 2 years ago, it would have taken like a day to give you a prototype or more, you know? And so that's now it's like 50 seconds, you know, it's crazy. So that's, yeah, that's kind of like my personal tech stack. I mean, honestly, it's not going to take much for like, I feel like the sort of future in which like the sort of almost best case scenario future, basically there's just like two things that are missing. The biggest one is not even capability. It's just speed. I think the thing, a lot of people underrate like how much more insane things can get if the feedback loops were instant. Like if you could V0 and instead of 50 seconds, it was like 0.1 seconds. If you said, hey, I need boom, and it's just there. And then you could be like, oh, move this. Oh, change this. And it's just like all of a sudden I'll do like 100, 200, 300 iterations in 10 minutes and give you a fidelity mock of what I think is possible. that your mind will explode, because I've done so many layers of iteration, like 100 or 200. Now with V0, I'll do like on a really, really polished thing, maybe like 20, but because it takes like a minute each time, it's like 30 minutes, 40 minutes go by. I'm like answering emails on the side while V0 is doing something. I often have like three V0s open because like each one takes like 2 minutes to get back, and like the bigger they get, the longer it takes. And then I'm like answering Slack and blah, blah. So that's just one thing that I think would be absolutely insane. Like, it's just speed, like just pure, the same capabilities we have, but just like the, like 100x the throughput. It will be really, really awesome. Context window, just like it's really, to me, not like the base level intelligence of the model. Like, it can do most things I ask it to do. It's mostly that just like there's just too much random crap you have to know about Gumroad's code base or Slack's code base, and we're really probably within maybe like one, maybe one and a half orders of magnitude of like that being in the context window, like the entire Gumroad code base. And I think that like, if that stuff is true, then like basically like you could just say, hey, here's the Gumroad code base. Here's a bug reported by the customer. Like, go find the bug. And like, I would think that in the next 2 to 4 years or something like this, basically like almost all software that's like Gumroad level complexity or less should have almost no bugs in it, because the reason bugs exist is because an engineer did not think of the entire code base when they were building something. Basically, they like made a decision based on knowing 60% of the code base, and there was like some thing outside of their purview that like led to this bug, right? Or even they just missed something. But I think you'll basically have this like infinite like AI that just constantly looks at your code base and just like finds bugs and opens PRs, and like I don't see why that doesn't happen. It already happens at like a small level. Like, if I have like a game that I'm building with Cursor, you know, I can just say, hey, this is a bug, fix the bug, right? And it's like 6,000 lines of code, so it can like generally do it. And so that I think like the economic impact of that will like start to increase. Is like just the code bases that like humanity runs on are just really big generally. In Gumroad is tiny on the scale of Google or Facebook or these, you know, mega, 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 mega platforms that billions of people use, YouTube, you know, these sorts of things. And then what doesn't happen, honestly, I'm such an optimistic person about this that I just don't really, it's hard for me to think about, like, I use the example of nukes. Like, nukes have been one of the best things. Like, way less war. Like, most people, when you think nuke, you're like, instantly, you're like, nukes, that's, but like, if you can get over that, like, intellectually, nukes have been quite nice in terms of preventing war, world war. They are scary to think about. But generally, humans seem to be quite good at... Oh, world's over. Sorry, I was wrong. Maybe. But it turns out, like, at least from my perspective so far, that like humans are very mindful of the risks of these technologies. And we put in a lot of checks and balances and things that prevent these technologies from... Like, you could just do a lot of crazy shit with nukes right now, but we know that. And so we like protect against those sorts of things to a degree that I'm shocked by. Like, I am impressed when I read about the history of nukes, like how many things almost happened. And to me, that makes me just think that it's not like they almost happened. We like to present it as if they almost happened, but actually there are probably many, many other things that would have stopped the thing from almost happening as well. And we just like to frame it as like this last thing was the only thing left, you know? And it's like, actually, like, most people just would not kill a bunch of other people. Like, that's just not what drives us. It's not like we want to be on the front page of the New York Times for murdering a bunch of people. It just like doesn't really jive with our, you know, our sort of how we want to use our agency or whatever. So I don't know. I have a hard time. I don't really know. Like, even if like China has a better model, I just don't think they're evil people. Like, I just have a hard time with trying to think about like this magical thing happens and it makes life worse. Like, it's something bad, something I may, maybe like humans. Oh, like, here's one. Maybe I think it would be bad if we at a fundamental, like, cultural level denied it. Like, I think that's possible. Like, that somehow we end up with AGI and all these crazy things, and yet you like walk down the street and it just doesn't, like, we just like, it's kind of like, you know, I don't know, like the Dark Ages or the Middle Ages, where like things were still happening, but like somehow on a cultural level, it was just like not okay to talk about. Like, it just did not get written up in the New York Times. I don't see how this happens, but like, there, you know, there are things that make me think like we're basically we're going to be so scared that like people will not need to work, that we will like invent an entire reality that requires people to work. And humans just can't deal with the fact that working is not really what humans are good at anymore. That, like, for example, like, we could have UBI, but instead we have insane amounts of social welfare that require insane amounts of people to like pick who gets it. And like, even the people receiving all the welfare don't even exist. It's just like to keep us thinking we're making decisions and like, but we have to go to work. We have to like sign up, you know, we have to like hate this character that comes in and tries to fire us every once in a while. Like, but all of that is effectively like made up, right? Just like the Matrix, like they could have just given us all fun lives, but instead they had to construct this like society of conflict because that's what we needed actually, or whatever. Right. So I think that would be like, to me, one of the worst quote unquote case scenarios, is that we humans never actually live in like paradise, because we just like don't admit it to ourselves in a weird way. It's like the opposite of like Gnosticism, where like Gnostics believe that, you know, on Earth is kind of like a version of hell, and like God was killed or something, and we're actually on hell and whatever. And that's why life is so bad and bad things happen. But actually, like, what if we're like on heaven, but like we are in denial of it? Like, we're like, eggs are $50,000. It's like, yeah, but like money literally grows on trees. Who cares? It's like, no, eggs are $50,000. Like, I'm gonna die. It's like, no one dies anymore, dude. It's like, no, I'm gonna die. I think that just based on some history, that seems to also happen, where like people like to think that they're just like their lives are much worse than they actually are. And I could see some sort of like weird, like ultra version of that, that AI enables, you know. Even sometimes I live in New York and people like complain about all these sorts of these weird things. And I'm like, but your parents pay for your rent. Like, I don't understand. You're like complaining you can't afford a vacation, but you don't even pay your rent. Like, I'm like, you're failing with your biggest cost covered. Like, I just like, you're like, you built like a made up game in your head and you're not doing well at that made up game, you know? And I think that could be sort of like psychologically devastating, and like we like come up with some weird system to, and of course like most people a lot of people will know, but it'll be like you'll go to a party and like no one will talk about it, you know. It'll be like, oh, how was your day at work, honey? And it's like, oh man, my boss was so bad, and you know, it's just like
this is why we need evals. You know, great pitch of why evals are the source of all solving all problem is, as soon as there's a number we can all empirically point to that says we've achieved this thing, life is easy. Sahil, this was a ton of fun. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us. I'm super interested to see like where all of this goes. This is a great reminder for folks who aren't building with these tools to like go and use them. I think like ultimately like that's the way you it's this weird moment where you can like live in the future by using these tools, and like you just go sign up and like start playing around with them and get this crazy different world than like the base version of the world. So go build something.